In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You're advised that any views expressed by the hosts or their guests are not necessarily the views of Tug Entertainment or its partners.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, depending on where you are. I should be politically correct or careful and just say good day. That's not even correct, since this is an international show listened to all over the world, everywhere they have internet. So there's people in Sydney, Australia that could be listening in, and God knows what time it is there. Welcome to Officer Radio, brought to you by Officer.com. I'd like to offer thanks today to LE Gear and WTG Tactical, both for sponsoring today's show. They provide gear that makes life easier and helps get the job done. Please visit legear.com and wtgtactical.com for all your equipment needs. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. Today we're going to talk some more about active shooter response evolution. Those of you who listened last week or have heard the podcast from last week know that we had Jason Stoddard on the show with us, and Mr. Stoddard is going to come back after our first break and join us again today. He's the owner and president of the Warrior Training Group. Happened to also be that's where WTG, the Warrior Training Group, WTGTactical.com. That's their website. He's a nationally recognized trainer, and he is an active duty law enforcement professional who deals with the realistic potential of responding to an active shooter event every time he goes to work. Active shooters have been a reality in our country for far too long. But a process or policies for how law enforcement responds to them wasn't standardized until after Columbine. And, you know, it's a shame we don't have to look any more than 4 days ago to see the need for why we have those policies in place. And we'll talk to Jason today about the shooting that happened on Monday. And there was a stabbing that actually happened in an elementary school that resulted in a death that was just reported earlier today. We'll talk about that a little bit as well, if I can find the news article again. Throughout the show, we'll be taking calls from our listeners. I know how you guys love to dial the number. Use your finger. Punch these numbers. 866-404-6519. That's 866-404. I'm getting a correction. Do away with that number. Today's number is 877-864-4869. That's 877-864-4869. I am not going to be taking email comments that interferes with the bandwidth and causes some technical glitches on occasion. So if you have a comment, question, or observation, call that number, 877-864-4869. And we will deal with it either on the air or afterwards. I can email you after the show or call you back after the show if we don't get to it. Today's show, like all of them, will be archived on the officer.com radio page, as well as our podcast page. To find it for reference or future listening, just look up on your screen at the top. If you're listening to the show live, it's right there in the blue bar. It says officer.com. There says radio. Right next to it says podcast, either one of them. You might want to bookmark one or both. The podcasts are going to be good for reference material for training. The shows are also available on iTunes, but they only list them by the date. So if you want to find the topic material, come to our podcast page, find the date with the show title so you know the topic material, and then you can go to iTunes and download the show for that date. Hopefully you all know that we have a Facebook page and a Twitter feed. Any updates we plan for the show go on both. You post it on the Facebook page, post it to Twitter. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Not only do we appreciate the interaction, but it allows us to serve your information needs better. And I know I'm a slow learner. It's taken me a few months, but I'm actually getting the hang of Twitter a little better. I got that compliment from Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, of female forces, a very well-known officer survival instructor nationwide, and she focuses a great deal on issues that are particular to female officers. She writes our monthly column for women. We appreciate her input, and getting a compliment from her about being more technologically savvy is definitely a compliment. I take that compliment, and thank you very much, Sarge. Appreciate it. Now, last week we had Jason Stoddard on the show, and we talked about school shootings across the history of the United States. As I had mentioned, we had one comment that was posted. The first recorded school violence was in Pennsylvania, apparently 1764. A teacher and 9 or 10 children were killed. 3 survived. I still can't find any research documentation to support that. It came to me in a comment on the article online. The first one that I've been able to document was in New York in 1891. It was the first mass shooting resulting in minor injuries to several students. It's interesting that the New York Times, as far back as April of 1866, was actually counseling parents to make sure that their children, their boys, 12 years old or about that age, if they were going to go to school with other boys who were carrying guns, they should make sure that their children were properly armed with the most approved and deadly pistol available, and that there may be an equal chance at least of their shooting as of being shot. Now, most of us today consider the New York Times a little bit of a liberal newspaper. They kind of take the gun control stance side of things. I don't know what's changed there in 145 years, but a lot has, quite obviously. They went from telling parents to train their kids, not only make sure they were properly armed, make sure they were properly trained so that they had an equal chance to do the shooting as they would of being shot. How many people in our educational system today would read that and go, holy cow, what were they thinking? Folks, don't get me wrong. I am not espousing arming our children. I don't think it's a good idea to send all of our children to school armed. I'd really be happy if we could keep guns out of schools, but putting up signs isn't doing any good. Virginia Tech is the almost perfect example of that. It's a gun-free zone, except for Sung Hee Cho's. Apparently he didn't have a problem getting guns on campus, and the gentleman who brought a gun over and killed the police officer there, he didn't have a problem getting his hands on a gun and bringing home. There's no invisible wall that stops guns that doesn't stop people. There is no magic that keeps guns off of our school campuses. There's no spiritual force or power that we can just wave our fingers or wiggle our nose or blink our eyes or any of that other super cool stuff that's been done in TVs and movies that will simply eradicate violence from our schools. It's just not going to happen. Unfortunately, violence in our schools has increased as the population of our schools has increased. Some people in the world seem to feel that the violence in our schools has increased with the boon of television across the span of the last 60 years. Video games across the span of the last 20 or 30. We can blame anything in the world that we choose to blame independently or as a group for an increase of violence in our schools. I personally hold shooters responsible for their own actions. I'm not going to – and folks, just so for the record, I've got 4 kids. My youngest is 14. If my 14-year-old son takes a gun to school, the responsibility I hold for that is that I did not keep the guns properly secured. I will eat the responsibility for that. That's my fault if I don't keep the guns properly secured. Further, it's my fault if I haven't raised him properly to have enough respect for human life and enough skills to deal with conflict resolution that he feels the need to take that gun to school and do violence or harm. Then I failed as a parent as well. So as a gun owner, I failed not to secure my weapon properly. As a parent, I failed to raise my child properly. But that's where my responsibility ends. If he picks up a gun, goes to school, and starts pulling the trigger, shooting at people, he's responsible for that action. He and he alone is responsible for every pull of the trigger. Not the gun manufacturer, not the local politicians, not the school, not coaches, teachers, or even the bullies that picked on him. He is responsible for his choice and his action, and I would hold him responsible as such. And as an active shooter instructor, I have a number of times publicly espoused the very fast neutralization of a threat in a school. Now, and this is one of the things Jason and I talked about last week, and we'll talk about it again this week. We don't emotionally or by policy, protocol, or training prepare police officers for the realistic possibility of having to engage with lethal force a child. And there's that possibility does exist. The youngest school shooter in the history of the United States was 6 years old. Thankfully, it wasn't an active shooter. It was one shot, one victim. But at 6 years old, he wasn't even capable abstractly of the realization of death. And when we look at the ages, we have 11, we have 13, even if you have high school kids, we don't teach our police officers, we don't prepare them emotionally for the reality of having to go and engage other than an adult or a young adult. You know, we think about Harrison Kleibold, we think about Columbine, Douglas Kleibold, we think about 14, 15, 16. These kids are almost as big as us. They're almost adult size. It's easier to deal with the emotional turmoil of having to deliver lethal force to shoot people who present a lethal threat to others who are at least adult size. What do you do when that lethal threat is 10 and it's child size? You have the same responsibility, but we don't prepare our police officers for that. And this is where I've gotten myself either in trouble or I've been called crazy in the past. Since I wasn't able to find targets with young adult or child images on them holding weapons to teach police officers to shoot at, I took a picture of my own son holding an AK-47, and I had it blown up into posters. And I had the picture was taken so that the AK-47 was aimed at the photo as if pointed at the police officer that would have to decide whether or not to engage that target. And I had a lot of police officers who simply told me, it's really uncomfortable. Yeah, it's at the range. I know it's paper. I can do it. But it's hard to shoot even just a picture of a 14-year-old pointing an AK-47 at you. What do you do when it's 12, 11, 10? It gets worse and worse and worse. So we're going to talk about all that and more with Jason when we come back after our break, which we're coming up on our first break. Again, I would like to thank LE Gear and WTGTactical.com both for sponsoring the show. Stick around. Stay with us. Active shooter response is not going away. It's a hot topic, and we need to make sure we're straight in our heads and our hearts in how we deal with that violence.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show. Every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles. And then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, LeahJansen.com. That's Leah, LeahJansen.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen. And listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio. powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com, and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. Before I go on, let me thank again legear.com and wtgtactical.com for sponsoring today's show. Our 800 number for today's show is different. It's 877-864-4869. Should you get up the gumption and the guts to call, use your stubby little finger. It's 877-864-4869. Now, as I mentioned before the break, we are talking about school violence, active shooter events. Last week we had Mr. Jason Stoddard on the show, owner president of Warrior Training Group, and he's back with us again today. How you doing, Jason?
Sir?
Are you there?
I am here.
Cool. I think we had a little burp in your phone, but it's not my phone and it's not the producer. It's just your phone. I'm going to point the finger of blame at you.
That's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I know. You ducked pretty good. Welcome to the show again. Did you hear the opening part at all? Did you get a chance to listen?
I did.
All right. This week alone, and you remember last week's show, thank you for being there then. Thank you for making the time today. You know, last week we were talking about active shooter, and we agreed that there's just so much to talk about. We weren't going to get to it in 1 hour show. We're not going to get it today using another hour, especially when we look at this past week. In Ohio, on Monday, we had a school shooting. Now there's three dead. And I don't know if you've seen the news, but today in Chicago, there was a stabbing in an elementary school. Two students were stabbed. One's died. The other one's seriously injured. And that's this isn't an active school shooter, but this is violence in our schools. Have you seen that article yet or seen the news yet?
No, it's been – I have not had a chance to look at the news. We were pretty busy this morning at work, so I wasn't able to look at the news at all. So I have no research on that whatsoever.
Well, there's very little information about the one in school. Apparently, it's elementary school kid age, elementary age school kids, two of them stabbed, one died. The suspect was immediately arrested. Thankfully, and we've seen this too, you know, in at least in other countries in Asia where the gun control's more, I don't know, tighter wound or something, however you want to say it, in Japan and China, we've seen these mass violence attacks using edge weapons, chopping weapons, and things like that. And that's not something we even talked about last week, but it's something to keep in mind in the back of our head. Now, how much do you know about the shooting that occurred on Monday in Ohio, in Chardon, Ohio?
Done quite a bit of reading on what actually happened. I've also listened to the audio tapes that were released. Actually shared those with during my roll call the day after that they were released. Was very impressed with the response that the officers had. Had to have a shooter in custody in 15 minutes that fled from the school. It sounds like they did an absolutely wonderful job while they were there. It would be defined as an active shooter, but our response to that, unless, as we talked about last week, unless we had a cop sitting in that room, there would have been no way to prevent the death once it started.
Go through the timeline of events, if you will. My understanding of this is that one kid took one gun with one magazine into the school, shot people at random, and when the gun ran dry, fled the scene. Is that about right?
That's as far as I've been able to see. It looks like it was a .22 caliber handgun that may have been stolen from his grandfather, I believe CNN was saying yesterday, out of the barn. Maybe 10 rounds were fired with a .22 at close range. You can pretty much guarantee that most of those were probably fatal shots in the head. They're not really saying it's too new to say exactly what happened. They're not really releasing much information. But the first officers, according to the audio tape, once the incident was dispatched, it sounds like on the audio tape that they had at least one officer there within 39 seconds, I believe. I didn't bring that in. I ran into the door right before this started. I believe it was 39 seconds they had the first officer on the scene, and about a minute and 7 seconds the second officer was on the scene. So the response time was absolutely amazing.
Well, and we talked about this last week as well. We saw the same thing at Virginia Tech. I mean, Virginia Tech, we actually had two fully equipped SWAT teams on the scene in less than 2 minutes. And then they, of course, had to breach the doors. They had to find a point of entry, so there was a time lag there. But on the scene in under 2 minutes, two fully equipped SWAT team, 21 guys. In this case, two officers on the scene in less than a minute, one of them at 39 seconds. How do we overcome the challenge? What do we have to do, do you think? And this isn't a question about law enforcement. These schools, obviously, the faculty, staff, they have to do something to increase their own response time to be able to do something to neutralize the shooter faster. And I'm not saying, you know, we need to have teachers shooting students. It's hard to grasp that concept, but how do we reduce the numbers of the violence? How do we reduce the loss? If the violence happens so fast, we can only get there as fast as physics allows. What do we do?
I think very, very few of these things happen on a spur of a moment. There is these kids have talked about it. They've written about it. They've planned it. They've put it on their Facebook page. They've put it on their Twitter page. They've talked to their friends. We have to increase our intelligence gathering. When I was in the schools, one of the things that we were constantly doing was interviewing teachers that possibly had a kid that was a threat. We were constantly going to schools, and you can't judge prevention, and it's very difficult to look at numbers of how many of these things that we've stopped. How many of these things have we put a stop to because of good intelligence gathering, because of good teachers, school administrators that have seen the warning signs? The Secret Service put out a study years ago that's still pretty much dead on as far as what we're looking for.
You know, I think in 2007 I saw a piece of information that said the city and county of Denver said that they stopped 19 school attacks just in that 1 year alone.
I would not doubt it.
How do they do that? Do they do that because you get into the politically touchy stuff? Are we profiling students? Are we picking on the slow students? Are we picking on the bully students? You know, there's always going to be the liberal side, the conservative side of every argument we ever have. To me, when it comes to saving the lives of children, preventing violence, we always have to err on the side of caution. How do we do it without making war camps of our schools?
Well, it has to be a whole spectrum of things. It has to be a well-educated teaching staff, a well-educated administration. It has to be a well-educated police department. If they have SROs in the school, it has to be a well-educated SRO program.
SRO, school resource officer, just in case anybody doesn't know. SROs, continue on.
There has to be training. There has to be ongoing training. And one thing that a lot of agencies are doing, and some are forgetting, is to train the parents. Bring the parents in at the PTA meetings if you can get them there. The more that you can put out there, the more information that you can put out there, the more information from the Secret Service study, from the things from the individual officers that they know, the precursors, that is really the only way that we're going to prevent or reduce what's going on. Once the person is en route with a gun, it becomes almost impossible to stop from happening. You have to detect it before it ever starts.
Absolutely, and there's no reason not to. All these ones we've seen, after the fact, we've been able to go back and go, oh, well, he said he was going to do it, or he gave indications. Sung-hee Cho in Virginia Tech, my God, a year before he went on his killing spree, he wrote an essay describing how he would attack an engineering building, chaining the doors shut, and attacking the students that he attacked. He wrote out his attack plan a year before he did it, and without being super critical of any one individual at Virginia Tech, quite literally, when it was brought to the administrator's attention, they all went, well, what do you want us to do about it? I mean, somebody's got to be held responsible when it's proven after the fact. And at the beginning of the show, I said this. Nobody's responsible for pulling the trigger except the guy who pulls the trigger. However, if we, after the fact, in the course of investigation, find that people were negligent in fulfilling their responsibilities, shouldn't they be held responsible?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And it goes right along with the polarized society that we live in. Is the law enforcement professionals, we're the easy ones to blame. We are the easy ones to blame that we weren't there fast enough, that we didn't do the best job that we absolutely possibly could. We're the easy ones to blame. And as time has progressed in the 24-hour news coverage and everything else, I think we've accepted a lot of that. We do have to hold people accountable for not doing their part, but we as the police can't do that. It's very difficult for us to do that. So our focus needs to be on the response, the intelligence gathering. How do we stop it from starting before it ever starts? If it does happen to start, how do we stop it from there? How do we contain it? How do we punish the bad guy?
I'm sorry, I got to back you up, and we're gonna run into our break before we can finish this conversation possibly. But hang on a minute. I've been a cop for 3 decades. You've been a cop for a long time. If 3 people have knowledge of a robbery that's going to occur, and 2 people commit that robbery, and the one guy who held information and didn't say anything about it gets it discovered after the fact, isn't he charged as an accessory?
Under most circumstances, yes.
Okay. So if I've got a principal or a school counselor or a dean of students or somebody else.
I think we should, but in this society that we live in, I think we run into a political environment. I think we run into things that kind of stop that from occurring at times. As you mentioned in Virginia Tech, we're not just talking about a robbery, we're talking about an active shooter. And to you and I and to many people in this country.
You're going to hate me. Jason, you're going to hate me. Now we've got to take our break and get the advertisements thrown in here. And we'll talk about it when we come back. Stay with us. Mr. Jason Stoddard from Warrior Training Group talking about active shooter evolution. Obviously, a hot topic. We'll be back.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Attention parents and teachers. Here is a series of alarming yet true facts about the current state of teaching reading in the United States. The federal government has spent close to $500 billion to improve reading ability, and yet we still have over 8 million students who cannot read on grade level. 440,000 students who have a total reading vocabulary of 50 words or less, and a national dropout rate of 1 new student every 26 seconds. Sadly, one of these could be yours. Fortunately, it's not too late to help. Introducing The Reading Show with Dr. Joe. A fast-paced, highly informative, easy-to-listen-to show led by nationally recognized reading authority, Dr. Joe Lakovich. For more on Joe on the show, check out his website, failurefreeonline.com. Listen in this week to learn amazingly simple ways to turn this problem around. The Reading Show with Dr. Joe, with your host, Dr. Joe Lakovich, Fridays at 10 a.m. Central on toginet.com.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
All right, folks, welcome back. Sorry about the technical glitch before the break. Apparently, my connection fell out, and as did my guest today, Jason Stoddard's connection. We're all back now. We were talking about, and for lack of a better way of saying it, deadbeat faculty, staff, and parents, people who have foreknowledge that there's a potentially violent student and they take no action, no positive action to interdict it, to stop the violence, to prevent it from happening. Now, obviously, this isn't everybody. If, like I said earlier, Denver said they had 19 attacks that were stopped in 2007. So obviously, there's some people willing to take the action. But in other places, there were people who had plenty of warning and never took any action at all. Case in point, Virginia Tech. And my outlook was, shouldn't we be charging these people as accessory before the fact? Aren't they criminally liable if they have knowledge and don't take action? And Jason, you were in the middle of giving me your outlook on that when we went to break.
I absolutely 100% believe that they should be charged. But we have to look at the educational institution, and we have to look at, does freedom of speech play a role into that? Do they use that as an excuse? How are people, as you put it, deadbeat people who aren't being held criminally responsible for these things, how are they not being? And if we go as the police start to charge people like that, how does that make us look in the court of public opinion? Right, wrong, or indifferent, that plays a role.
We always look screwed up in the court of public opinion unless we're doing fireman work and pulling people out of burning buildings. We are always the bad guys, okay? But and I understand what you're saying, and we have to worry about how it makes us appear, and there's the whole politically correct environment, all that stuff. I get that. But you know what? Even if it doesn't become a criminal matter, and I don't know if you have kids or not. I've got a son who's in school. If somebody if a kid takes a gun into my son's school and shoots other kids, and it's proven after the fact that any member of that faculty had foreknowledge and could have prevented it, and in the interest of protecting their career or for some other highfalutin value that they can articulate because they have a PhD and I don't, you know, in education, whatever, there should be a price that they pay. They hold responsibility for the children's deaths.
I agree. However, when it comes to the schools, really the only time you see people, you see administrators and teachers being held responsible is if they're having sex with their kids. That's really the only time that you ever hear anything about it. They're not being held responsible for these things if they do have advanced knowledge. Now, you talk about Virginia Tech, and you talk about the fact that somebody read it a year prior and didn't do anything about it. How often is that occurring? I think our research and the investigations that we're seeing come out, months after the attacks are showing that it's happening an awful lot. Why isn't it being done? I don't know. It's way above my pay grade.
Yeah, no kidding. Way above mine too. And I'm gonna get off the topic because I can feel my blood pressure going up and my face turning red, angry about it. It shames me in our society today that there can be an adult that has the ability and the responsibility, and there's two different things, but the ability and the responsibility to defend the lives of children, to protect the lives of children in their care and custody, and they don't do it for fear of repercussion back to themselves. And I'll leave that alone. Let's talk about SROs for a second. And I know at one point, the county I worked in, and I'm not calling your county out, I'm not calling my county out, but in the county I worked in, all the school resource officers were the police officers that weren't getting it on the street. They couldn't go hands-on. They were too kindler, gentler, whatever. They weren't making it. They were going to be a danger to themselves or somebody else on the street. So rather than terminating them or doing something else, they put them into schools as school resource officers, elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, figuring the kindler, gentler would work with the schools. What's your take on that?
Personally, I haven't seen it. I went into the schools as a school resource officer in 2003. I heard that a considerable amount in the training that I went to. I would say that there was no bigger retired on duty folks in the schools as there was on the street. I don't believe that I personal knowledge in the school that I worked in, I made it a tremendous amount of arrests, a tremendous amount of contacts. I had a stabbing in the school that I worked in. I don't see that. I heard that logic considerably, but I think that we've moved past that. All the school resource officers in the county that I work in do a terrific job.
But I'm talking about the kind of person, the police officer they are, and they're not the kindler, gentler, can't make it on the street. I'm going to go the other way. And you know me personally, for the record, for the purpose of full disclosure, Jason and I know each other personally. I consider Jason a friend of mine, and I would trust him with my family. That said, the kind of guy that I want to be the SRO in my son's school is the 7'6", 350-pound Special Forces veteran monster that comes in wearing a vest and willing to carry a rifle every day that it's going to take 309-millimeter rounds to stop because every bullet he absorbs is one less that can potentially be shot into my kid. We're not anywhere close to that, though, are we?
No. No, okay. Not at all. But I think as time progresses, we've gotten much better. We see a tremendous amount of good officers that are in our schools. The old thing of let's just dump the guys who are retired on duty into the schools, I think is bygone. I think that we are starting to see, and I think a lot of people have the same outlook that both you and I do, that we need to put our motivated officers in the schools. Because let's face it, our SROs, they work from the time schools open till the time schools end. That they are on their feet, they're working, they're hustling, they're doing all kinds of things. And for the most part, those officers are working with little supervision, and their community is their school. Anything that happens in that community is going to be held to them, and they can be held responsible for what goes on in there. Maybe not criminally, but at least through the administration. How come you didn't know this was going to happen if it comes out that you should have?
Right. Now let's look at that for a second, though, because while they're working in the schools, it's the principal's world. The principal owns that school from time it opens, time it closes. They're responsible. And for all intents and purposes, although the officer or deputy may work for the sheriff or the police chief, they answer to the principal while they're in the school. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, shots get fired. 911 gets called. Who's in charge?
Under the NIMS ICS protocol and in the agency that I work in and several others that I've trained, with some training, it's understood that the police are involved, that the police are in charge.
That SRO, however, on the scene, the first police officer on the scene, is in command, and the principal has to do what he's told if he's got a brain in his head. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
How many of the ones you work with actually accept that?
I don't know personally how many accept it. As a administration, and when you actually sit down and do the training with the administration, and you get both the school board or the administrators or things like that, I don't think they have much of a choice. They may not like it, but I don't think that they have much of a choice. And
do you think
they
can successfully subjugate their ego to do what's best in the interest of the children?
It's possible with some good training.
Okay. But again, the key is training and including them in what needs to be done.
Absolutely. You can't. It cannot be just us. It can't be that we keep all of our tactics secret or we keep what we're going to do secret. The school administration, the teachers, the administrators on the ground, the school boards, the superintendents, they all have to be involved. They have to know. In the agency that I work in, every year, they spend before the, when the teachers first come in, before the kids get there, they do a presentation. They do the same presentation at the school board to the school board members and the superintendent and all the assistant superintendents. So everybody knows what's going to happen if one of these events does happen. And that has to occur, and it has to occur throughout the country.
After our next break, I want to talk to you more about that training and getting everybody involved and what they have to accept or not accept. But I want to tell you a story real quick. I was invited up to speak to New Jersey, the Association of School Resource Officers in New Jersey, NJASRO. And I was very honored to do that. And while I was there, I articulated the outlook that I've taught my children. And I refuse to have my children be a victim. Every year we get the discipline handbook, and one of the rules says violence is, you know, fighting is unaccepted for any reason at any time. I always change the period to a comma, and I put accept and self-defense, and I have my son sign it, and I sign it. And I've had a couple of principals call me, can you come in to visit? Sure, why'd you do this? Because my son won't be a victim. He won't start it, and he knows that if he does, he's going to be in trouble. He'll try to walk away. He'll try to talk his way out of it. But when it comes to it, he's going to win. My son won't be a victim. None of my children will be. I articulated that at the New Jersey Association of School Resource Officers, and I was awesomely surprised to see the state superintendent at the time stand up and start clapping. I got a standing ovation for this outlook. Walk away if you can walk away. Talk your way out of it if you can't walk away. If you're walking and talking's not working, win. Don't be a victim. When we talk to these student or the administrators, the faculty and staff, how well do you think that philosophy would be accepted?
I think it would change depending on which portion of the country that you're in, and depending on which school district you're in.
Okay.
You know, when I was working in the schools, most of the physical altercations that occurred, these kids knew were coming days or a couple days in advance. They had been running their mouth to each other. They had been talking to each other. They had been going through friends. There was usually a Don King involved, somebody who was setting the fight up so that they could sit back and watch it occur in the hallway. Very few of the altercations that I had in the school that I was in were just spur of the moment, kid runs into another kid in the hallway. There was history there, and it could have been stopped if it was brought to an administrator or if it was brought to the SRO or it was brought somewhere. I didn't investigate very many at all where two kids who didn't have any dealings with each other or didn't know anything that was about to happen just dropped everything and started fighting in the hallway. I agree with you.
The situation just exploded. Okay, I understand. You were saying?
I agree with you that kids shouldn't be allowed to be victims. That goes for physical altercations, or it also goes for if somebody is in the room shooting. There's a company out of Texas that's teaching that. they should be taught those things. Throwing books, throwing desks, doing whatever is better than sitting there curled up, cowering in a corner to take one in the back of the head.
You're getting ahead of me, Jason Stoddard. We're going to talk about that after the break, too. I absolutely agree with you. We've got about 1 minute to the break, I think. I can see – it's kind of funny. I can see the producer typing. Yes, we do. 1 minute to the break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about this atmosphere of victimization, if you will. I'd like to discuss whether or not we've actually taught our children to be victims through this zero tolerance rule that I think has been blown way out of proportion, and how sometimes it's used to enforce beyond anybody's original intent or even common sense. I want to thank you again for taking the time out to be with us today. We've got one more segment up after the break. The break's going to hit us in 30 seconds. So think about this. And all you listeners, when we come back, we're going to talk about, are we training our students to be willing victims, and is there any proof of that in recent shooting events? I think there is. And then how do we turn that tide? How do we switch that around? So that's what we're going to talk about when we come back from break. Mr. Jason Stoddard, thank you very much for being with us and being patient and hanging in there. Folks, thank you for listening. After the break, we will talk about active shooters some more.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list. Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski. A live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to this last segment of Officer Radio. Today, we're talking about active shooter with Mr. Jason Stoddard, owner-operator of WTGTactical.com, one of the sponsors of today's show. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for sponsoring the show. And I have to also acknowledge our other sponsor, LEGear.com. Thanks to them for sponsoring the show. So, Jason, before we went to break, I was talking about this environment of victimization, this way we're training students to be willing victims. Do you see that as a problem today?
I do. I absolutely do. You have to teach your children the drive to live, especially in a active shooter, active threat type environment. Schools are target of opportunity. They are a 100% target rich environment. And if our children are simply taught in that situation to cower underneath of a table and take one in the back of the head, we are doing no justice for them. We have to teach them that it's okay in that instance. This is a life or death instance that you need to fight back. You have to have the skills, even if it's to pick up a book, even if it's to pick up a desk or a chair or to barricade the door like they did in Virginia Tech so that the shooter can't get through. We have to teach them that.
How do we, and this is a very serious question. I'm not being facetious at all. You and I have both trained people, known people who wanted to be police officers, but who didn't have the intestinal fortitude when it came down to it to put their hands on someone and force their will on that other person in the name of the law. How do we take students that we teach over the span of an 18-year school career, sometimes longer than that, how do we, and we've taught them, don't fight for any reason, never fight back, never resist, even defensively. How do we get them to the point where in the most threatening situation, then they can? If they can't go hands on, you know, for lesser stuff, less stressful, less danger, how can we get them to do it when it's big and ugly in their face?
It's parenting. You have to be willing to talk to your children about the realities of the world that we live in. These kids are, by the time that they're 10 and 11 years old, are more worldly than you and I were by the time we were 30. They know more about the world. They know more about the things that are hitting them in the face every day. They're seeing and doing and hearing all these things. The stuff that we didn't see or hear until we were in our 20s. So we have to open their eyes to the reality of what the world that they live in. Part of that becomes, if there's a shooting in your school and you can't get out, you need to be able, and it's okay for you to fight, and it's okay for you to not be a victim. If you got a baseball bat, hit the shooter over the head if he gets that close to you, and you have the opportunity. If you have a book, if you have a desk, if you have that opportunity, don't just lay down and hope. We have to teach our kids that.
How well does the school systems accept that?
I don't even know how to answer that.
There's the big question to choke on. You and I are of the same mind, and that people down there in Texas that are doing it, God love them. You go into a schoolroom with a gun, you got 15 rounds in your gun, more power to you. They throw 38-pound books at you is the equivalent of being stoned to death. And I would encourage people to do that, pounce on them and beat them into the ground and hold them until the police get there. You're defending yourself from murder. There are no holes barred. Do what you got to do. But how do we get parents, faculty, and staff to accept somebody training those faculty, staff, and students, janitors, everybody, to fight back in a potentially lethal fashion? Can we get them to do it, number one? Will they accept it, number two? Are we ready for the public turmoil, number three?
I honestly have no idea, because we live in such a polarized society as it sits now. We can't get anything out of Washington because everybody's fighting. So and when we look at our society as a whole, we have so many different views of everything, which is everybody's right. But the end result is this is a reality in today's world. If you show them personally, I think to show some of the crime scene photos, to show some of the photos of what these kids go through. I have some pictures that very few people in the world have ever seen of some of these active shooters. And when you show them to people, it opens their eyes. It's very difficult to have them understand that, yes, this can happen to you, because we all live in a world where it won't happen to me. The complacency, we deal with that every day in average police work. But we have to open their eyes. We can no longer hide them or shadow their eyes or put blinders on and say, this will never happen to my kid. And when they see it firsthand, I think it would help open some of their eyes. But that's going to be a whole nother issue that we have to deal with. But eventually, especially if this keeps occurring, active shooters breed active shooters. You have one, it gives kids courage. It gives two other kids in the country courage to do it. And historically, when we have one or two shortly thereafter.
So, I can't help but think about, and you probably know a gentleman, I'm going to throw his name out there and hopefully he won't get mad at me. In 1988, I was having a conversation with a gentleman named Sean Davenport, and we were working the street together. He's a deputy in another nearby county. We were working the street together, and he said to me, everything's a matter of perception. And I argued with him. I said, there's no way. You know, the truth is the truth. Reality is reality. It's not a matter of perception unless you're deluding yourself. And it probably took me 20 years before I realized what he was saying. And he was absolutely right. Everything's a matter of perception. All these people that are in denial, all these people who think it can't happen here, that they live in, it won't happen here, USA, however you want to say it, until it does. And then they get that wake-up call. Then the reality strikes. They've got to realize that they're not doing anybody any good by being in denial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But we have to continue to try and beat down that door. We have to continue to try and teach them that these things can and do happen. We have to seize upon the opportunity, seize upon the momentum that's built, that when these things tragically do occur, that somebody has to go to these people, go to the administrations, go to the school boards, and they have to say, look at what just happened in Ohio. We have to prepare for this if we haven't already. When was the last time that your agency did an active shooter drill? When was the last time that your agency did an active shooter drill where the suspect ran from the school? Most of the active shooter drills that we're doing, the suspects are still in the school and we're hunting them. That threw a whole wrench into what happened in Ohio. Now, those guys, they overcame it. They did a great job. We can only limit ourselves by our imagination. And the traditional, what happened in Columbine, the two people that go in and attack a school, yes, that still can occur and it still may occur. However, we have to throw some different dynamics into it and we have to learn to train. Most agencies anymore are maybe training once a year. As Colonel Grossman says, there hasn't been a kid killed in a fire in the United States in a school in 30 years or 50 years.
Right.
How many have been killed in school shootings?
Every quarter. Yeah.
You do fire drills every month. They're required every month. But to get a school to practice a lockdown drill sometimes is like pulling teeth.
But you know what? And I'm not going to defend all of our brother law enforcement professionals, brother and sister law enforcement professionals. But a lot of times it's not a matter of whether or not we've done active shooter drills. A lot of time it's whether or not the schools have done any kind of reaction to violence drill, lockdown, shelter in place, evacuation, whatever the plan is. How often do they actually do it outside of fire drills?
From what I've seen across the country, there are very few school districts in the country that are doing it once a month.
Let me ask you this then. How do we – and we're going to come up to the end of the show. God, there's still so much more to talk about. What's the message that we got to get out there? You know, we've got to – and this is my outlook. You tell me whether or not you agree with it. Modify it as you see fit. If there's an active shooter that goes into my son's school, certainly I want that lockdown and shelter in place. I want every door locked that can be locked. I want everybody in that room, all those kids, to get in that corner that can't be seen from the door. You know, whatever kind of messaging system is set up for windows so that the police know where they are, know where they aren't. Do we educate them in what we're going to do? I think we should, and then I want to know how well the administrators are going to react to the fact that without any compunction whatsoever, I intend to shoot whoever's hunting children, and I don't care what age they are. And then how do we teach these same faculty, staff, and students to fight back collectively, and even if we could, would they?
I think they could, if shown reality. I think that they could without any problem if given the reality of what we face every day. And I still think that we sit in a world sometimes where this will never happen to me, it will never happen here, it will never happen anywhere around me. And unfortunately, as you said, look at what's happened in Israel. In Israel, the Palestinians attacked several schools, they attacked several buses. Now all of a sudden, most of the Israeli schools are like compounds. Armed guards ride the buses. How long ago was it?
One soldier for every 10 students on a field trip.
Yep.
But I get people mad at me, and I'm a retired officer now, and I'm retired once, and I work for an agency now. If I want to take my gun and go be a chaperone for my kid's school, I catch holy hell for it.
That is, unfortunately, that's the world we live in. We just don't tell them. You just don't tell them. That's what it boils down to. I have two children. I have two teenagers, much the same age as yours. And if I were to go on a chaperone trip, nobody's going to know.
Until you get to D.C. and you're going into a federal building and you can't take that gun in there.
Until you've got to know the procedures before that. But
right.
That's where you've got to be smart about things. We talk about how you're authorized to carry a firearm, or if you're authorized to carry a firearm, whether it be a concealed carry permit as a civilian or whether it be as a police officer, and you fail to do that, you are nothing more than a sheep. And you're going to do nothing more
than sit
there.
Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
All right, listen, we got 2 minutes left in the show, and we've kind of touched on an interesting topic here. Active shooter, school violence isn't restricted to the school structure. There can be attacks on buses. There can be attacks on children on field trips. There can be attacks at malls and businesses and everywhere else. I just told the producer this. I always worry about filling the hour, and then I always feel like we need another hour when we get to the time's up. active shooter applies to so much more than just schools now. How much are we educating outside the school system, the general public, for attacks that happen in public?
I think we're slowly evolving that way. We haven't even finished our process in the schools, and we're slowly evolving that way. And we have to speed it up.
Finish the process in the schools before we take – I mean, we've got to be a little more proactive in my view.
Oh, absolutely, because we've been reactive for how many years? And now we have to start being proactive. But now you start getting into manpower issues, and you start getting into fiscal issues, and you start getting into all those things. It takes time to do that training.
If we can subsidize Iran's food needs, we can take care of our own people here at home. And yeah, I just flicked off, and I apologize. I didn't mean to flick off at you. It just pisses me off that we run into budget issues when we're spending so much money doing other stuff for other people. But we're down to like 30 seconds, Jason, and unfortunately, we have to end the show. Thank you very much for being with us again. I appreciate you taking the time, and we appreciate WTGTactical.com sponsoring the show.
Thank you, sir. Stay safe.
I know you're going back to work.
I appreciate it, Frank.
All right, man. Thanks, Jason. The listeners, thank you very much for being with us. We're probably going to do some more again soon. Active shooters, a lively topic that's not going away. Thank you to LEGear.com for sponsoring the show. Thank you for listening to us. If you have any comments, email them to me, frankborelli@officer.com. Thank you for listening. Stay safe as you work. Support your local police if you're not one of them.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week, Officer Radio is your source for